And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Fraser here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Got a lot to get to on the program here today. Take your thoughts as well on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Michelle Knezovic, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robbie. Nice to host with you this morning. Doing well.
It is. Joe Rexroad out today. Michelle Knezovic in. So
switching chairs.
5 hours of radio.
Ooh, yes. Yay. 6 to 11 a.m. You'll be able to hear this beautiful voice on the radio.
That's right. Lots of talking for Michelle today that's going to take place. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robbie and Michelle. Doing well. Probably running on, I don't know, 4 hours of sleep, maybe less.
There you go.
It'll be a great morning.
Phenomenal. As Travis Tritt would say, it's a great day to be alive.
Yes.
There you go.
Very well done on that, bro. We got a lot to get to on the program here today. Josh Kendall from The Athletic dropping by at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on he covers the Atlanta Falcons for The Athletic. But his thoughts on the quarterback situation down there, some rumors about Ryan Tannehill and potential interest there from the Atlanta Falcons. And we'll get his thoughts on Arthur Smith heading into his third year in Atlanta as well. Jonathan Hutton of Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow from Outkick joining us at 8 o'clock as well. So looking forward to all that. And we got a lot to get to on the Titans front today as well. We begin with the NHL draft lottery last night. And I'm sitting here watching this go down, Michelle, last night. And the first couple of draws go how I thought they would. Calgary's at 16 and the Preds are at 15. So the most likely scenario entering into the night was that the Predators were going to end up at number 15 overall. And that is where they've ended up, which is number 15 overall. So they'll pick at number 15 here in Nashville this summer in 2023 when the draft takes place. And they'll also pick later in the first round whenever Edmonton's pick is. So Edmonton, tough loss last night. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But they'll have two first-round picks. The first will be at number 15 overall coming up in the draft. And then after that, after I saw where the Predators were going to land, the question was, all right, who is going to end up with the number one overall pick and thus win the Connor Bedard sweepstakes? And for those who are unfamiliar, Connor Bedard is a superstar prospect in the NHL, and he's being compared to, you know, the Sidney Crosbys and Connor McDavids of the world. So he said, okay, where is he going to go? And as soon as Kevin Weeks let it slip on the broadcast last night that Columbus had the number three pick and it was down to Anaheim and Chicago, mm-hmm, I just thought, oh, no. Oh, no. Here we go. And the Chicago Blackhawks win the NHL draft lottery last night, and Connor Bedard is heading to the Blackhawks. I mean, I guess that it's hilarious because Kyle Davidson, the Blackhawks GM, got on like a press conference last night. It's like, wait, we'll have the opportunity to choose for some really good talent here at number one overall. It's like, okay, yeah. But you have no idea who you're getting ready to pick. But Connor Bedard, going to be the next member of the Chicago Blackhawks.
And this has been the scenario. I mean, we've been saying bleep the bed for Bedard since the trade deadline. What teams? It was pretty clear, you know, what teams were in that category, which teams weren't. And we've been saying it as a joke. We've been throwing teams out there. But in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, gosh, you know it's going to somehow the Chicago Blackhawks, it'll be perfect timing. Patrick Kane will go to the Rangers. They're in prime position for the rebuilding year. And last night, they are awarded with, they had 11% chance, 11.5% chance. In 2007, they get Patrick Kane, and now Connor Bedard. And I was kind of walking around my house last night, you know, cleaning, getting stuff together, and Ryan from Chicago, who is a recurring character on this show, he goes, oh, cool, the Blackhawks got the number one pick.
Yeah.
And he's not a huge Blackhawks fan. Like, we follow the Preds just because we live here more, and he's like, yeah, I've experienced it, but he's not a diehard hockey fan.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my gosh, my friends are freaking out. I'm like, Ryan, you don't understand the magnitude of this right now.
Yeah.
The magnitude of, I mean, this kid is 17 and he is a generational player. I mean, just an organization. We joke with you a lot about the Packers, Robbie,
yeah,
of, you know, getting the quarterback play you have had. And, I mean, it's very similar right here for the Blackhawks of, I mean, getting Connor Bedard. I mean, I just, there are no words, and I almost just want to laugh because it's like, how does a franchise get this lucky?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I guess there's never really such thing as a sure thing, but I mean, he's pretty darn close. I mean, Connor McDavid, when he came into the league, was pretty much a sure thing, and he has lived up to it and more. Sidney Crosby was a sure thing heading into the league. And Connor, I mean, I've watched a lot of Connor Bedard over the last year. I mean, the guy's going to be unbelievable. I mean, he's really, really good.
Like, he's young, you know?
Yeah, like, it's – and, you know, he's still got room to grow into his body. But, I mean, there are just things that he can do with the puck that are just ridiculous. And now, if you're a Predators fan, you're looking at it and you're like, well, great. You get to play him in the division every year for the next 10 to 12 to 15 years or however long that's going to be. I mean, it's – yeah, this is what we've discussed, right? Like, the, you know, a lot of the conversation heading into the year was, okay, which path should the Predators take? And especially when things weren't going well for the Predators, you know, a lot of discussion was, should they be bad to try to get themselves in a position to do this? I mean, Chicago clearly had this in mind to begin the year. They were tanking, and, you know, whether it was going to be number one overall or whether it was going to be, you know, number two or three or four overall for Chicago, they wanted a high draft pick. They wanted Connor Bedard. You can never guarantee that you're going to get Connor Bedard just based on the way the draft lottery system works. But that's who they wanted, and that's why they were as bad as they were this year. It was full tank. And now it's paid off, and they're going to get Connor Bedard. That doesn't mean that they're just going to go on some run of Stanley Cup championships here. Like, you know, Connor McDavid, I think, is the best hockey player that I've ever seen in my entire life, and he's not won a Stanley Cup yet, and now he's down 2-1 in the series after last night. So it's really hard to do it, and you need more than one guy. But this is not good news for the Nashville Predators today that Connor Bedard is going to end up in Chicago. That is not what you wanted to see.
Probably the worst situation. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned before, so Chicago's had the number one overall pick twice in franchise history. So 2007, Patrick Kane. I mean, think about it. It's 2023, and Patrick Kane just went to the Rangers.
Yeah.
So however many years that is, you know, and now – having a guy like Connor Bedard, the ability to draft him. I know we can't ever predict that it's a sure thing, and what Patrick Kane winning three Stanley Cups in Chicago did was absolutely incredible. It's very, very hard to do that. But, I mean, for those of you who aren't familiar with Connor Bedard, 17-year-old forward, has 143 points in 57 games last season, 71 goals and 72 assists in the Western Hockey League. He is 17 years old. And, I mean, he's been talked about as, you know, one of the best in the same category as the Patrick Kanes, as the Crosbys. So, any other team other than Chicago for Preds fans, but, I mean, I guess it is what it is.
I mean, now you got to deal with it. And look, I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot of suspense here in Nashville in terms of,
and of course, the
who's
draft
going
is
number
here.
One. Yeah, like that's the thing. Like he's going to be drafted here. We know who the number one pick is going to be here when the draft comes around here in Nashville. The way it went down last night was really interesting, and a lot of Predators fans, really a lot of NHL fans, are just upset by it. So the broadcast last night, they're doing it from the NHL Network, and Kevin Weeks is kind of reading off the broadcast picks there, and he lets it slip before they're headed to break. It's down to the final three picks, and it's Anaheim, Chicago, and Columbus. And he lets it slip heading before the break that Columbus was the next draw and was the number three pick. And people were like, really? Because that hasn't happened yet. Why? How do you know that they're the number three pick? And look, I'm semi-familiar with the draft lottery process based on some people that I've talked to. I used to work for NHL.com, so I kind of had an in that way, and also like some reading and reporting that I've seen. So I know that the draft lottery is not quote-unquote rigged. I know that there's a process to it, and I know that there are many things in place to help that not be the case where it's rigged. You're not doing yourself many favors if you're the NHL by not showing the ping pong balls on TV. Like, just having Bill Daly, the deputy general manager, get up there and flip a card over of who the pick is, I know it's not rigged, but you're not doing yourself any favors with the optics when you get up there and you're just like, here's what the card says. Trust us that the ping pong ball said that behind the scenes. Just put it on the TV. It's really not that hard.
I don't get why they don't have it on there. I almost think it would be better TV. People would love to watch that. It's like, okay, here we go. The suspense of which team is going to get it. And then when your broadcaster also knows in the moment which team is coming up next.
Yeah, it's not good.
I mean, you just don't do yourself any favors of a lottery that people already can suspect things. I mean, I know you just laid out. I don't think it's rigged either, but, you know, why don't you just give the viewer the ability to watch it? I mean, I think that would be better TV anyways. Have everybody be surprised in the moment. I understand you need to prep things for broadcast, but it's just not a good look, especially having it slip before the break, and then it's like, okay.
It does not help you when Chicago ends up winning the number one overall pick and you don't have the process kind of laid out in front of you. Like, again, I know that it's not rigged, but you don't do yourself a whole lot of favors with the conspiracy theorist out there when there's no evidence that the ping pong balls are on the TV and Chicago ends up with number one overall. So, look, it is what it is. I didn't think it was a great look for the NHL last night with optically the way that broadcast went down. But it is what it is. Chicago gets number one overall, and they get Connor Bedard. We'll take your reaction to that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll also get into the playoff action that took place last night as well. We'll have some AFC South conversation coming up later this hour as well. Everything on the table, all that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Fraser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. LD from McMinnville texting in says, until they show the actual draw, I'll believe the NHL draft is rigged. Sorry, Robbie. Johnny on Twitter says, knowing the Preds' luck, Connor Bedard, who will be drafted by the Preds' biggest rival inside Bridgestone Arena, watch him score his first NHL goal this fall against the Preds. This is from Johnny on the text
probably.
Line.
Maybe two or
see
three.
See what the schedule looks like. But
could be right, Johnny.
I imagine he's going to score a few goals against the Preds in his career. Be my guess.
Yeah, and his probably long, long career. But to all the conspiracy theorists out there, you know, who do think that it may be rigged, like, oh, the year that Chicago sucks and they trade off Patrick Kane at the deadline and they're the third.
I mean, it does line up nicely.
Odds, and it really does add up nicely for a great storyline for all of you out there. So
does.
I'm here for it.
It does. We'll get back into the Connor Bedard stuff a little bit later in the show. Some playoff action last night. Let's just start in the NHL. Vegas last night hammers Edmonton on the road 5-1. So Edmonton wins 5-1 in game two to even it up 1-1. And Vegas responds on the road last night with a 5-1 win. It was interesting, Michelle, because, you know, Edmonton scores the first goal of the game, and they had a couple of looks from McDavid and Draisaitl that, you know, 9 times out of 10, when those two guys are going in, where it could have been 2 or 3 to nothing right there. And then Vegas turns it on, and they really dominated the game last night. Edmonton, you know, this is what we're it kind of goes back to the Bedard discussion, right? So Edmonton has Connor McDavid, who's the best player in the world, and they've got Leon Draisaitl, who might be the second best player in the world on the same team. And yet, I watched them play, and those two guys are so dominant. But if they don't score, they got a tough time everywhere else. And just the goaltending from Edmonton. Like some of the pucks that went in the net last night, you're just you got to make a save every now and then if you're Stuart Skinner there. And he couldn't make any. Vegas had their goalie get hurt last night. Brossoit gets hurt, kind of stretching on a 2-on-1 with McDavid. And I forget who the other guy was. It wasn't Draisaitl with him. Anyway, Aiden Hill, their backup goalie, comes in last night, stops all 24 that he sees. So it's a big win for Vegas. And now if you're Edmonton, which I think a lot of Predators fans are kind of pulling for with Matthias Ekholm in the fold right now, now it's, you know, I think you got to win in game four. You don't want to go down 3-1 to Vegas because Vegas is so good defensively and so kind of like locked down with the way that they play that I don't know that Edmonton can come back if they're down 3-1 in the series. So we have, in my opinion, reached the must-win territory for the Oilers coming up in game four.
Our favorite word, a must-win game. But, no, I mean, I think that most people around here, at least I'm rooting for the Oilers because, of course, you want to see Matthias, you know, succeed in his next team. But it's frustrating, too, when you watch this Oilers team because you know how dominant Connor McDavid and Drysdale are. So then when they have patches where they aren't scoring, it's like you look at this team and you think, okay, not taking anything away from the Golden Knights because, you know, Vegas earned the right to be there, but it's got to be frustrating from the Oilers' standpoint. I understand the Stanley Cup playoffs are, you know, probably the hardest thing to win, but you watch the and you look at the Oilers, you know, just having two of the best players in the world and then not be able to get anything offensively going. I mean, it's got to be frustrating. And then if Vegas in game four does go up 3-1, I mean, that's such a tall task to be able to win out the rest of the series. So I'd agree. I mean, it's a must-win situation. And looking at this Oilers team too, having Draisaitl, having Connor McDavid, but not really having that elite goaltending, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this team does get knocked out in an off-season move of one of them. I mean, I would assume it'd be Draisaitl to get maybe some better goaltending in there for them.
Be interesting to see. I mean, look, if they get knocked out in the second round, it's going to be really disappointing. I mean, the path has kind of opened up for them with just the way things have shaken out, the Avs out. I mean, the way that things have gone down here, I mean, the Oilers, in my opinion, they should go to the Stanley Cup final. Now, I say that, Vegas had the best record in the West. So, Vegas is a good team. Like, Vegas is, you know, their goaltending has been a bit of a question mark to me, and now it's more of one with Brassois going down last night. But Eichel and Stone and Petrangelo, they got a lot of guys that have done a whole lot of either winning or have played at a high level in this league for a long time. So, Vegas is really good. But I just think the time is now for Edmonton. So, we'll see if McDavid and Draisaitl can respond coming up in game four. In the NBA last night, the Miami Heat take down the New York Knicks. They're up 3-1 in that series. Jimmy Butler with 27 and 10 last night. Bam Adebayo with a big game last night. And don't look now, but the Heat are one win away from the Eastern Conference final as the eighth seed. So,
you know, do you remember when you wanted them to lose in the play-in game?
Sure do.
Robbie looked at Joe and I and he was like, you know what? I just need them to lose so we can just like get this over with. Tyler Hero breaks his hand. And now all of a sudden the Miami Heat, you know, they take down the Bucks.
Well, I don't know Jimmy Butler's going to turn into Michael Jordan in the playoffs, which apparently he has. It's been pretty incredible to watch. Like, first off, Eric Spoelstra. I said this a few years ago and people got real mad at me. He's the best coach in the NBA. And quite frankly, I don't think it's very close. Like, he's the best coach in the NBA. And he does this year after year with teams that, like, go look at that Heat roster and tell me that they belong to be in the Eastern Conference Final. And they're one win away from being in the Eastern Conference Final. He's a great coach.
Yeah.
Great coach. He doesn't get the respect he deserves because he had LeBron and he had D-Wade and he had Bosch. But LeBron's talked about this before, too. Like, there's a whole lot of coaches that have had talent. There's a reason that Spoelstra is as successful as he is. He's a great coach.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at an NBA roster, too, every team's going to have talent, right? It's not like you're in college basketball and there's like so many different levels. I mean, these are the highest level of basketball players in the entire world. I understand, you know, you have teams like the Lakers and then the Heat. You got a LeBron and AD or a Jimmy Butler on another side of things. But, you know, he has been – and this Heat team, even this year, you know, playing team, you're like, you know, they still kind of have that core together, but maybe it's time to split up that core, split up Jimmy Butler, Bam, Tyler Hero, kind of get a new group of guys in there. But I mean, the coaching, the playing from Jimmy Butler, dropping 50 in games, now up 3-1 on the Knicks. The Knicks, a team that people had coming out of the East, especially now with Boston down. I really like the Heat. Obviously, I know you're very excited. And, you know, the other series in the East, too,
yep.
76ers and the Celtics. I mean, 76ers, James Harden has looked
good. He's going nuts.
Good. Yeah. Him, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey. And, you know, if I'm a Celtics fan, I'm a little worried.
Yeah. No, that series is 2-2. They're game five tonight, and that's back in Boston. But that's going to be an interesting one to see if Boston can close that one out, or if Philly sneaks up and gets them there. L.A. wins last night 104-101 against Golden State. So the Lakers up 3-1 on the Warriors right now. LeBron with 27 and 9 last night. Went 10 of 25 from the field. So not a great shooting night from LeBron last night. AD, 23 points last night. And Austin Reeves with 21 points. Golden State led by Steph Curry, 31 points from him, 12 of 30 from the field. So he put up 30 shots.
And he had a triple-double
last
too.
Night. He did. Yep. Triple-double from Steph last night, but it was not enough. And the Lakers are one win away from dethroning the reigning NBA champions.
If you were to tell me this right before the trade deadline, you know, and they had Russell Westbrook on the team, I'd be like, you're kidding me. Also, I just think that nobody should ever call LeBron old, because he has proven in some of the games that he has had in, whether it be the Memphis series, whether it be this series. I mean, he essentially sealed the deal last night when Steph Curry goes try to get a layup late in the game and just absolutely chases Steph down with an insane block to seal the deal. And as you said, Robbie, I mean, they're up 3-1 on the Warriors. This Warriors team has struggled matching up with this Lakers team. And this Lakers team, I mean, you get D'Angelo Russell in there, Jared Vanderbilt, you mentioned Austin Reeves, and then you get a high, high level of play from LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and they don't look like, you know, they're on the back end of their career. I mean, this team is lethal because they don't have only have great superstars on their team. They have really significant role players that can put up, like you mentioned, Austin Reeves, that can put up significant numbers in these games. So I'm kind of looking at the West right now, and I'm looking at this Lakers team, and I'm thinking I would not be surprised if they could do it again.
Yeah, they're one win away from taking down Golden State. You got a Nugget-Sun series that's evened up at two. They're back in game five tonight in Denver as well. So it'll be interesting to see if LeBron and the Lakers can close it out there. Ben on the text line says, the Warriors just don't have the same energy. Got to shake up the roster and add a scorer that doesn't disappear every other game. You know, Klay Thompson, to that point, went nuts in game two and then with 9 points last night. And just was almost a non-factor out there at times.
Yeah, you can't have that. Just point blank. You can't have a guy like Klay. What he's done for this organization. You just can't have him be absent in a series, especially against the Lakers, especially in a close game. I know it was in L.A., but, you know, that's a difference maker. I mean, when one of your best scorers on the team has 9 points, I mean, you can't expect to be a Lakers team that is playing their highest level of basketball right now at this point in the season. And to that point of this series, you know, if the Lakers win in five games, they're going to have a lot of rest before they face either the Suns or the Nuggets, because that game, I mean, they're already tied up right now. So
it's probably going seven.
Yeah, I mean, that's even more dangerous for the Lakers, right? They closed up the Memphis series early. They got more rest. The Warriors went seven games with the Kings. You know, LeBron and AD can really use that rest, and they've shown what they can do when they have it. So if they close this one out early, the Suns or the Nuggets, they better be scared for these Lakers team.
Cam on the text line says, sorrows for Draisaitl. I had this like 3 weeks ago.
Lord.
Yep, I would do that.
It's going to take a little bit more than using Saros to get to the Draisaitl.
Wait a minute.
Saros.
Listen, if that was
about three more players, maybe plus another couple of picks.
But if that was it, you're a Preds fan. You sign up on that.
Somebody has asked me that. Like, would you trade UC Saros for Leon Draisaitl straight up? I was like, would I? Yes. Would Edmonton? No, they would not.
If that's the deal, we are signing before the ink is dry.
Absolutely. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the AFC South. And I have this question for Titans fans. Who are you more worried about in the AFC South? Is it Anthony Richardson and the Colts or C.J. Stroud and the Texans? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Fraser here with you. Joe Rex Road out today. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So I asked this question to Titans fans. We've talked a lot about the Titans and their draft after, obviously, the selection of Will Levis. We'll get a little bit more into the Will Levis conversation coming up at 7 o'clock. But I want to know this from Titans fans. As you look around the rest of the division, we know about Jacksonville, and we know what Trevor Lawrence is. I think as the season went on last year, personally, I saw enough from Trevor Lawrence that I said, okay, well, we know he's at least going to be good. Like, he's a good quarterback. Now, how good is he going to be? I think that's still left to be determined. Like, is he going to be one of those elite guys like a Burrow or a Mahomes? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to rule that out. But I think at the minimum, we know that as long as Trevor Lawrence stays healthy, he's going to be a good quarterback, and he's going to be a problem in the AFC South for the Titans. So we know that. So they're kind of out of this for the sake of this discussion. The other two guys that were drafted at quarterback by teams in your division this year. So you're talking C.J. Stroud with Houston and Anthony Richardson for the Colts. Who are Titans fans more worried about? As you look at, maybe not even next year, but as you look down the line as to the players that they can grow to be, who are you more worried about? Is it C.J. Stroud and the Texans and his situation with the Houston Texans? Is it Anthony Richardson and the Colts? Cody on the text line says, has to be Richardson. He's got the coach that was able to build an offense around Jalen Hurts along with better weapons around him. This from Cody on the text line. But Michelle Knezvik, I ask you, if you're a Titans fan sitting here today, who are you more worried about moving forward? Is it C.J. Stroud in Houston, or is it Anthony Richardson and the Indianapolis Colts?
I think when you talk about long term, right, I mean, they all have reset their quarterback clocks, whether it be Trevor Lawrence, everybody who got drafted this year. I think when you look at this long term, it's got to be the Colts and Anthony Richardson for me. I think when you look at the Texans, I understand they got a new coach. They drafted C.J. Stroud second overall. And I think C.J. Stroud is going to be, you know, a good, efficient quarterback in this year's draft. I think he's going to be able to start. But I'd look at the Texans organization as a whole. You know, I don't think other than Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud, they had a great draft this year. You know, D'Amico Ryan's first-year head coach. I understand that he's a defensive-minded coach. You know, what will the offense look like with a guy like C.J. Stroud in it? And is C.J. Stroud a prospect and a guy who will be able to overcome, you know, not having the best wide receivers in college football or the best offensive line? Will he be able to overcome situations? I mean, the wide receivers he had in college are better than he will ever have in the NFL,
yeah,
which is just an incredible statement to say. So will he be able to overcome that? I look at Anthony Richardson, I look at the Colts, I look at a roster that already is pretty well constructed. I mean, even last year, we were talking about them and the Tennessee Titans and comparing them pretty equal. And it really just depended on, okay, how is Matt Ryan going to perform? And he had, you know, a very, very big drop off last year. But I don't think Anthony Richardson will be the day one starter there. But if Shane Steichen and this offensive-minded head coach, you know, can really develop Anthony Richardson, continue to build the team around him. But they have Jonathan Taylor. You know, they have Pittman. They have weapons that are, you know, established in this league. And I think that, you know, it comes down to how they handle the Anthony Richardson situation. But looking at it as a whole and who could be the most dangerous long term in this division, it's got to be the Colts and Anthony Richardson for me. I think he has the highest ceiling. And I think this roster is already pretty well constructed with just some more pieces next year. And, you know, he gets another year older. I think that they'll probably be the most dangerous in this division.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I would agree. Like, Richardson has, I think, the highest ceiling. And it's hilarious because you're already starting to hear things coming out of Indy about,
oh gosh,
I think Jonathan Taylor said, like, it's about to get scary with Anthony Richardson. I'm like, so here we are again, an off season of people hyping up Colts quarterbacks and all this other stuff. And I realize it's different. Like, it's different than Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan. You got a rookie coming in. So I get all that. And Anthony Richardson is a different type of player. But it's hard for me to pay a whole lot of attention to, like, stuff that comes out of Colts camp because they've been just screaming about this
because
for 4 years with three different guys.
So
it's like, okay, all right. Well, when I see Anthony Richardson do it on the field, that's one thing. Now, I will say, I mean, it doesn't take a genius football evaluator to watch Anthony Richardson throw the football and realize that there's a little bit something extra there. You're like, okay, well, he's got some pop to him. There's some athleticism to it. And like you said, I mean, the ceiling is pretty high. And if he can approach that, and if Shane Steichen helps him get there quickly, I think that is the scariest option for Titans fans to be worried about. You know, my answer is probably at the moment Stroud. Mm-hmm. The only hesitation I have with Stroud is where he got drafted. Like, I think Houston, we have seen over the past couple of years, has just been an absolute tire fire down there. And that's really nothing to do with the players on their roster. It's the way that the team has been constructed, the ownership with Cal McNair and some of the things that have gone on there with the Jack Easterby situation and, you know, Nick Caserio getting mad at the media a couple weeks ago for thinking he might be leaving. Like, there's just so much going down there that is just wild. We've talked to John McClain about it a few times and just the dumpster fire that it's been down there in Houston. And we've seen this time and time again. Like, when you go to bad organizations, it's hard to overcome that if you're good players. Now, having said that, Trevor Lawrence was in Jacksonville. They were a bad organization. They made a horrible coaching hire in Urban Meyer, and it basically ruined his first year and wasted his rookie year. And then you make a good hire in Doug Peterson, and he comes in and immediately it looks better. So I like D'Amico Ryans. I think he's going to be a good coach. I loved what he did in San Francisco. So maybe that's kind of the thing that changes the narrative and changes the direction for the Texans down there. But, like, I think Stroud's going to be pretty good. I don't know that he has the ceiling that Anthony Richardson has, but I love his accuracy. And that's – in the NFL, playing quarterback, that's the most important thing to me anyway, is you got to be accurate with the football. You got to be on time in your windows. And for the most part, I think that he is. So I think he's going to be good. I do wonder, though, with what's around him at that place in Houston, are they going to ruin him based on some of just the weird decisions that they've made over the course of the past few years? Is that going to get better down there in Houston? We'll see. It's funny. You got Houston and the tire fire that they are, and you got Jim Irsay in charge of the Colts.
Well, I mean, to your point of the Houston Texans, I mean, what, three head coaches in the last 3 years? Yeah. I mean, that's not a recipe for success. It's similar to the conversation we have with the Colts, what, five or six quarterbacks in the last five, six seasons? And, you know, of course, we have a text from Indy Ben right now. He said, would you rather face a Kirk Cousins or Cam Newton-type quarterback? Stroud looks like he'll play it safe. Play the safe quarterback style, not much upside. Richardson and JT in the same backfield could be very, very scary for defenses. Oh, Indy Ben is getting excited about this.
Well, look, in all seriousness, I mean, yes, I hear what Ben is saying there from just the physical standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, Cam Newton was obviously, you know, a good player and was at the top of his game, really good in the NFL. You know, I would be more concerned not of the Richardson JT combo in the backfield. Like, what's going to end up being making the case of whether or not Anthony Richardson is successful is how well can he throw the ball at the NFL level. I mean, he was so inconsistent in that area last year with the accuracy and with all those things. How well can he throw the ball at the NFL level? I know the physical tools that he brings to the table. I know he's going to break off some big runs. I know that he's going to be an absolute terror to deal with in short yardage situations where they're trying to do quarterback sneak, quarterback power, and get first downs that way. Like, there's a lot that he's going to be able to do really well, but it's going to come down to how accurate is he going to be with the football. That's going to tell the story of what Anthony Richardson is at the NFL level.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, everything else he can do is just icing on the cake. I mean, to Indy Ben's point, right, you can have an accurate quarterback like a Kirk Cousins who's a pocket passer, doesn't use his legs much, doesn't make plays, but it's the quarterbacks who have that extra oomph and they can add all of that. But, you know, the number one thing is he needs to be able to place the ball where it needs to be placed. It needs to be accurate. So to the point of, I think Anthony Richardson has the highest ceiling, I also would not be surprised in 2 years from now if you told me that, you know, he was a complete bust, because we've seen it so many times in the NFL. It's such a hard position to play. And when you have all this athletic ability, when you can make plays and scramble and everything that he did, yeah, that's great. But if you can't put the ball where it needs to be and you can't be accurate, you're not going to be a successful quarterback in the NFL.
Well, and look, I mean, the bottom line is last year at Florida, he completed 53.8% of his passes. I mean, that's a terrible number. Now, look, Florida's receivers last year weren't good, and they had a lot of problems on that offense. And like I said, it does not take a football genius to go back and look at the tape and watch some of the throws he make and not be incredibly intrigued by Anthony Richardson. But the bottom line is, like, a 53.8 completion percentage is atrocious, and that's going to have to be a lot better at the NFL level if you're going to be successful. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Throwing the question out there to you, Titans fans, who has you more worried? Is it C.J. Stroud and the Texans, or is it Anthony Richardson and the Colts as we move forward here? We'll continue that discussion coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Fraser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Throwing the question out there. Titans fans, who are you more worried about? Is it C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans or Anthony Richardson and the Indianapolis Colts as you move forward here? 615-737-1025. O'Brien on the text line says, Trevor Lawrence, by far, his hair is formidable. He does have formidable hair.
He does have great hair.
Trevor Lawrence is not a part of this conversation.
But. No, because he has already proven that, well, I mean, he has shown that he will be a good quarterback.
He's going to be good.
Elite, we'll wait for that conversation until we see, you know, a big, big playoff run from him.
Luke on the text line, going back to Indy Ben's comparison of Cam Newton. Luke says, how many Cam Newton-style quarterbacks have won a Super Bowl? This is from Luke on the text line. It's a good question. Not very many. You know, there haven't been a whole lot of Cam Newton-style quarterbacks. I mean, It's kind of the way the quarterback position is trending. It was interesting. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago, like looking at quarterbacks now in terms of they're just the athleticism at the position and the ability to move around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like very rarely do you see quarterbacks coming out of the college game now that don't have at least a little bit of that to them. Like, I mean, you know, Joe Burrow is not back there, you know, winning any 40-time races.
Mm-mm.
But we've seen him. He can get out of trouble. Like, he's not a statue back there like Tom Brady was back in the day. Like, those days are kind of gone at the quarterback position, and a lot of guys are being more athletic. Now, Anthony Richardson takes that to an extreme level. He's maybe the most athletic quarterback that we've ever seen just based on his combine testing mm-hmm. and the physical tools that he brought to the table there. So, number one, I'm really interested to see how that part of it plays out at the NFL level. But number two, going back to what I said, like, you know, 53.8% of his passes. And again, I watched a lot of Florida last year. I know that some of that wasn't on him. But 53.8% of the passes completed last year is not a good number. And he's going to have to get better in terms of being on time with the football, being more consistent with his accuracy, and doing that on the fly at the NFL level. That's why I think it would really be smart for the Colts to sit him down and let him kind of hang back and learn a little bit mm-hmm. and let Gardner Minshew kind of handle the reins to start there. I kind of get the feeling that they may not do that and that Anthony Richardson may start from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree, Robbie, and that was one of my biggest things too with the Colts when they drafted Anthony Richardson. I mean, he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
He's not even 21 years old. He is so incredibly young that you have the ability to mold him and, you know, help his success and not have to throw him out there week one, not have to have him take charge of a whole NFL offense. I mean, these guys who've been in the league for however long, right? You're a 20-year-old having to go in and take complete charge, be a leader. And I'm not saying he can't do that, but needing him to do that versus him just learning to do that is completely different. And the fact that they got a guy like Gardner Minshew, who is a very serviceable backup quarterback in the league, and the Colts can afford to not have to win right away, I know that that could be tricky considering who their owner is and him wanting to be, you know, with his hand in absolutely everything, whether it be via Twitter, whether it be actually in the NFL room and everything like that.
Electric guitars.
Jim Irsay is one of a kind. But I think, you know, starting him would really, really hurt his development just because he is so raw right now. And I think he actually could really benefit from not starting right away. I mean, Indy Ben was comparing Jalen Hurts and Steichen's offense. I mean, Jalen Hurts sat for a bit
yep.
before he got thrown out there. And I think we've seen a lot of successful quarterbacks who have taken a year and just soaked up the entire NFL lifestyle because it is such a huge change going into the NFL. And I don't think it's anything bad. I do think, though, it could be bad if he starts right away and he has to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, I think we'd be having a completely different conversation surrounding Malik Willis if he didn't start last year, or if he didn't have to play last year. I understand, you know, a fourth overall pick and a third round pick, it's quite different. But,
right, but the unknown is undefeated. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if all we had to go on from Malik Willis last year was the preseason and that was it and he never played, like, we would be sitting there all offseason saying, all right, well, what about Malik Willis? Like, can he be the starter for the Titans in 2024? Now, would that change what his ability level actually is? Probably not. And I think the Titans would probably deep down know that Malik Willis probably isn't ready to be a starter, even if he didn't play. But the fact that everybody saw him play, I think, kind of highlighted what you're talking about there. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Morning, Adam.
Hey, Robbie. Hey, Michelle. Hey, y'all put on your GM hats for a second, all right?
Okay.
If you're the GM, what do? What's your first step? Because I hear you guys every day. I hear you talking about it. The fact of the matter is that not only should Will Levis not play, Ryan Tannehill shouldn't play in this offense. Like, it's negligent. Like, there's no receivers. Like, I should go and try out, and I'm fat. Like, there's nobody there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like the tight end thing that we had going on a couple of years ago, where we're like, okay, well, they got to have a plan. No, they just didn't have a plan. I'm wondering if that's the same thing with the receivers this year. Like, they just don't have a plan. Like, I know everybody keeps saying there's receivers out there. Why haven't they signed one yet? What are they doing here? I think it's stupid, man. So just put on your GM hat, and what would you do? What's your move today? What do you do to energize the fan base? What do you do to help the passing game? Because I don't know. I'm sitting here as a fan and wondering if they even care.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, first off, you know, we laid the receivers who are available out yesterday, and you're talking Kenny Galladay, you're talking Julio Jones. And I mean, look, in all seriousness, the Julio Jones part of this, number one, there's no chance of him coming back here. Number two, I think he might be done. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll wait and see what happens there. Like, Kenny Galladay is the intriguing name that's still out there, but he's been so bad the last couple of years that, like, it's difficult for me to believe that he's going to come here in this offense and that he's automatically going to rediscover the Kenny Galladay of 2019. I mean, you're talking 4 years ago at this point was the last time that he had a really productive year. And, you know, he was hurt in 2020. He was okay in 2021 in New York based on the production. He was horrendous last year. I mean, he became an afterthought. So, like, Galladay's out there. You've got Julio Jones out there. T.Y. Hilton is available at the age of 33. But the problem is, like, you hear all these names. It's like, oh, those are good-sounding names. And then you look at the production that goes with it over the last couple of years, like, it's just not there. Like, it's non-existent. Mm-hmm. So, to answer the question, like, there's not much that's out there from a free agent standpoint that it has me interested whatsoever. Now, I know the follow-up to that is, well, look at the Titans receiving room. I mean, aren't one of those guys, couldn't they be worth it? And maybe so. Maybe if you get them on a one-year really cheap deal, you take a flyer. To me, to answer Adam's question, if I'm the GM, I'm looking around via trade. The problem is, mm-hmm. you don't have a whole lot of assets to trade with right now. And the philosophical question you've got to ask yourself if you're a GM, if you're Rand Carthon in this situation is, all right, what exactly do I want? Do I want a wide receiver that can help me right now but maybe is a little bit older? Or do I want to start saving some room or looking for wide receivers that can help me now and in the future when Will Levis – is the quarterback. Like, for instance, like Mike Evans, right? Mike Evans is going to be 30 years old. He's been productive every year of his career. He's been a 1,000-yard receiver every year of his career. That's great. That would interest me a lot if he became available from Tampa Bay. How much longer is he going to be that guy?
Yep.
DeAndre Hopkins, he's been one of the best receivers in the game for a long time. He's on the wrong side of 30 now. Like, we've seen the Titans do this before. It doesn't mean you can't try it again. But we've seen it with Andre Johnson. We've seen it at the back part of Randy Moss. Julio Jones, the most recent example of bringing in, you know, big-name receivers that are on the back part of their career and it not working out. And DeAndre Hopkins is coming off an injury-riddled season and began the season last year on the PED list. Like, what exactly does he still have left in the table? So that's the question. Like, if you have your general manager hat on, the question you got to answer is, what do you want? Like, do you want somebody that can help you right now this year for this team? Or are you if you're going the trade route, are you looking for maybe somebody that's a little younger and a little bit more unproven that you're taking a risk on by the time Will Levis is a quarterback?
Yeah, because you've already shown the fan base that you are resetting your quarterback clock. And just to take a look at what draft capital the Tennessee Titans actually have for next year, to put it in perspective, you have your first and second round pick. You gave up your third round pick this year to the Cardinals to get Will Levis. Are you ready for this? You have your fourth-round pick. Gave up your fifth-round pick last year to the Panthers to go get Dennis Daly. Yep. You have a sixth-round pick, and you gave up your seventh round pick? Oh, to get or sixth round pick to get Ugo Amadi last year from the Eagles, who is now not on your roster too. So you're looking at a very, very slim draft picks next year.
Yep.
And so you don't have much to give up. Even if you wanted to go get a guy like Mike Evans in a trade, in addition to that, I think his cap hit's around $20 million. So, you know, that would be a huge leap. And yeah, it might excite the fan base, but also too, okay, he's already 30. He's been productive every single year, but you're paying him all this money. And then when Will Levis is finally ready to start in 2024, maybe he has a huge drop-off year, and then you can't get those at the right time. So when I put my GM hat on, I weigh all of that, and I think you just ride it out this year and not be that great and begin the transition next year and try to beef up the roster. It's kind of how I look at it.
Cam on the text line says, trade Ryan Tannehill. The Titans are not winning anything in 2023. You embrace trying to get everything and everyone in a good spot for 2024, and you hope Marvin Harrison Jr. is in the same area as your pick and make it happen if you're close. Titans fans need to realize they aren't building the team for 2023. I hear you, and we've discussed that. Now, the Tannehill part of this is really interesting. Number one, like the trade part of it, just
give me a team.
I don't know where that's going to be at this point. I do wonder, though, like if Carthon and Vrabel deep down agree with what Cam said there and that maybe this year is not going to be all that great, do you consider cutting Ryan Tannehill? I don't know. I still think that's pretty unlikely. Like, I still think the most likely scenario is Tannehill is going to be the quarterback for this year, and then they'll move on to Levis after that. But I'm interested to see it. And that kind of leads us right into what we're going to talk about next. We'll continue the conversation on this, but also, how can the Titans best position themselves to help Will Levis succeed? We'll get into that coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.